Okay, well, let me start by thanking the organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak here about some recent work. And I should mention that all this work is actually done by Katie Hyatt and Jim Garrison, who are both grad students here at UCSB and in the audience. They really did all the numerical work here. I'm just doing the talking. And then Drew Potter has helped us with some analytical insights. So we've had a number of overview talks of MBL already. So, and already, if you're in this conference, you probably know why you're here. So I'm going to make this very quick. The system that we are thinking about here is a disordered system of, say, fermions. And for the purpose of this talk, I'm going to restrict to one dimension. And then the question is, what happens if we add weak electron-electron or fermion-fermion interactions to this system? So we have a Hamiltonian in mind that takes the following form. So we have particles with some kinetic energy term. They're living in some external disorder potential. And then to that, we may add some, say, electron-electron interaction. And so importantly, in the limiting case where we turn this interaction off, we're simply in an Anderson insulating phase. That's our starting point. And then we add finite strength interactions. And the question is, what happens? One possibility is that localization persists, which we would call many-body localization. And the other limiting case is that eigenstate thermalization actually re-emerges, and so localization is destroyed, and instead you get a thermal phase. Those are kind of the two limiting cases. You could come up with intermediate phases, which will come up actually later in this talk, but let's just for now keep in mind these kind of two elementary options. The picture you could have in mind for this is one of localization in Fock space, which was really pioneered in these papers. So in the case where this interaction term is turned off, we're looking at a non-interacting Anderson insulator, and all the many-body eigenstates are actually formed as single slater determinants. And these slater determinants are formed by filling fermions into exponentially localized single particle orbitals. So these are localized slater determinants. And now the picture to have in mind is that we turn on weak interactions, and the system gets washed out a little bit in Fock space. But doesn't completely change its nature. So the eigenstates, the many-body eigenstates of this interacting system can in some sense be viewed as a few Slater determinants. So there is some dressing of these wave functions due to interactions, but all of the universal properties, in particular the ones relating to localization, persist. Now you could ask, how do we make this notion of a few eigenstates more precise? One way to think about this is actually by going back to how we think about ground state phases. So in ground state phases, you could have some phase diagram like this in mind. We have a couple, two tuning parameters, say a couple of different phases. And we would call a phase because it's Hamiltonians that can be adiabatically connected. If we're thinking about topologically trivial systems, actually in each of these phases, we could identify some classical product state that represents some symmetry breaking pattern of the symmetries of my Hamiltonian. And then I would call a phase all of those Hamiltonians that can be adiabatically deformed into a Hamiltonian where the ground state is this product state, classical state, that's representing my symmetry breaking pattern. What I mean by adiabatically connected here is that I can deform the Hamiltonian along some path where I never close the spectral gap above the ground state. So now it would be nice to generalize this notion somehow to many-body localized systems. So where in the case of ground states, we have this adiabatic path connecting us from many-body states to product states that are somehow representative of the symmetries of the phase, you could ask whether one can establish a connection from many-body eigenstates of a many-body localized system to, say, eigenstates of an Anderson insulator. Now, of course, we can't use this notion of adiabatic continuity anymore because we're now looking at some state high in the energy spectrum of the system, you know, somewhere maybe near the middle of the many-body energy band. So energy gaps are exponentially small in the system size, so there's no way I can separate the state from nearby states in the spectrum. So we need some more generalized notion of that. And one notion we could rely on is that of a finite depth local unitary transformation, which you can pictorially draw like this. So you could imagine a product state, and then you apply just products of local unitary gates. So these are unitaries acting on, say, two sites. And the crucial aspect here is that we only apply kind of a finite number of them. So the depth of the circuit is finite. You could think of this in some sense as a generalization of time evolution. So if you were to discretize your time evolution, say with a Todorov expansion, you would get something of this form. But the crucial generalization here is that we're not relying on having a Hamiltonian anymore. So we can think about this notion of a finite depth local unitary without actually having to be able to write down a gapped Hamiltonian. And so in a paper, my paper with Chetan 2 years ago, we put forward this definition of a many-body localized phase as one where, in some appropriate sense, many-body eigenstates can be connected to eigenstates of an Anderson insulator by such a finite depth local unitary transformation. To make this precise, there's a couple of caveats you need to be careful with, but I'm not going to discuss that today. Now, in all of this, our starting point was that we have a system where we can turn off the electron-electron interactions and simply have an Anderson insulator. And so in one dimension, having such an Anderson insulator means that all eigenstates are localized. And now a question you might wonder about is what happens if we get rid of this limit? So what happens if we consider a system where in the absence of electron-electron interactions, actually the system is not completely localized, and instead we have some coexistence of localized and delocalized degrees of freedom? How do you get this in one dimension? So naively, you would think that you can't do that in one dimension. But of course, it can be done. The way to do this, which was discussed in two recent papers, the Maryland group, Xiaoping Li and his collaborators, who I think are all in the audience, and Modak and Mukherjee, is to consider an incommensurate potential in one dimension. And if you appropriately fix such an incommensurate potential, you can get to a scenario where you have a single particle mobility edge, even in one dimension. So you have some critical energy in single particle energy that separates localized and delocalized states. Unfortunately, this figure didn't come out in great quality. This is one that I took from the Maryland group. By adding interactions to this model, they find actually very interesting physics, and they find two mobility edges. These are now many-body mobility edges, so basically critical energy densities for the interacting system. And they find that at very low energies, the system seems many-body localized, so the entanglement entropy exhibits an area law, and ETH seems to be very strongly violated. Then they find an intermediate regime of energies where the system exhibits a volume law. So that's in this panel here. I'm not sure if you can read that. There's an energy density here where the entanglement entropy picks up a finite size dependence. But in that regime, ETH still seems to be violated. So if you look at the expectation values of local operators in nearby states, there's a big variance. And then finally, if you go to high enough energies, you go to a phase where you have a volume law for the entanglement entropy, and ETH seems to be satisfied. So this is one scenario where you could have such a coexistence of localized and delocalized states in one dimension. And of course, we know that this is a generic situation in high dimensions, so certainly in 3D, but also in 2D if you break enough symmetries. So to get some further insights into the system, we propose to study the following model. This is a ladder model. So we have, say, fermions hopping on a ladder. And in one chain, the fermions experience a disorder potential. So say in the upper chain here, the fermions live in some local disorder potential. In the lower chain, they don't experience such a disorder potential. So one chain is disordered, one chain is clean. In this model, we actually turn off hopping between the two chains. But then we can turn on some density-density interactions between these two chains. So because we don't have hopping between the chains, the particle number is separately conserved in each of the chains, which makes our life numerically a little bit simpler. Also note that I'll phrase this all in the language of fermions, but because we have open boundary conditions and the particles can't get past each other, this is really equivalent to considering bosons, hardcore bosons, or spins. You could think of this in many different equivalent ways. You could think of a two-component system where, for some reason, only one component experienced the disorder. So, for example, spin and charge. You could come up with physical implementations of such a system. And so, in the case where these interactions are turned off, these are simply completely decorrelated chains. They have nothing to do with each other. So this is very simple. The particles in this upper layer will become Anderson localized, and the particles in the lower layer will become delocalized. It's just a free fermion, a clean free fermion system. So now the question that I want to discuss in the rest of this talk is what happens if we turn on some electron-electron density interactions between those two layers. And there's really two scenarios. One is that localization is destroyed. So you could imagine that the clean layer, through this density-density interaction, can act as a bath for the localized layer. And so the energy transport through that system would essentially destroy localization of the entire system. But there's another scenario that you could think of where the localized layer acts as an effective disorder potential on the clean layer and thus localizes that clean layer, and the entire system could become localized. This was termed a many-body proximity effect by Raoul Nankishore in this paper earlier this year. One way to think about this system is also as an MBL system coupled to a bath. So conventionally, when we think of a bath, we think of some system that has many more degrees of freedom than our actual system. So we think of the bath as something very large, so that, say, the MBL system doesn't have any effect on the bath. The bath is completely ergodic and Markovian, so you can put arbitrary amounts of energy into it. You can take out arbitrary amounts of energy without the bath ever changing. That's a scenario you could study also in the context of MBL, and that has been studied. If you look at that, MBL in kind of the strict sense is destroyed, but certain features of the MBL phase persist. So for example, you could define MBL as the local spectral function having discrete features, and you can see that if you make the coupling between the MBL system and the bath weak enough, some of those features are actually preserved. This was studied analytically and numerically in the Princeton group. The system that we're considering here, where we have this disorder chain coupled to a clean chain, is different from this. So here we could think of the clean chain as a bath, but I'm putting bath in quotation marks here because the bath has the same number of degrees of freedom as the MBL system. So whether you want to call that a bath or not is maybe up to discussion. Actually, in the discussion that David gave earlier today, he talked of a bath as something that the system can be entangled with. And so in this case, the MBL system can actually be maximally entangled with the bath. But then at the same time, because this bath is so small, there's the potential for back action from the MBL system onto the bath, which could potentially localize the bath. So how do we now understand which of these scenarios is realized? We explore this numerically, so we'll find exact eigenstates using the shift and invert algorithm that was pioneered by Lewis and company last year, which allows us to get eigenstates up to about 20 sites. To detect whether we're in a localized or a delocalized regime, we'll look at eigenstate entanglement, which we've already heard a lot about today, so I don't probably need to spend much time on this. As has been discussed many times, in a generic quantum state or highly excited eigenstate or thermal state of a generic system, we expect volume loss scaling of the entanglement entropy. So if you cut out some region A out of the larger system, you get the entropy scaling with volume of A, whereas in ground states or MBL eigenstates, we expect this to scale only with the boundary of region A. How does this play out in one dimension? So if you take a chain, say, of L sites, capital L sites, and you cut out a block of little L sites, if you're in the thermal regime, you'll just get a linear growth where the coefficient is this thermal entropy density that'll depend on the global energy of your state. And then if you're in the many-body localized regime, this will saturate to a constant at some scale that you could call the localization length. This has been studied numerically many times. Here I'm showing some results from my paper with Chitten from 2 years ago. This is simply for a chain of 1D chain of fermions, very simple system. And you can see that there's an ETH regime. So in this regime, for weak disorder and strong interactions, the entropy grows linearly with the system size. And then if you make the disorder strength compared to the interactions large enough, you see a saturation to a volume law. And you can take this further, and you could study, for example, histograms of the entanglement entropy. So if you now look at this ETH regime, you'd get a Gaussian distribution of the entanglement entropy with a shifting mean. And if you go to the thermodynamic limit, this will narrow. Whereas if you look in the localized regime, you get the distribution that David showed in his talk, so you get some peak at log 2, which comes from local physics, and then an exponential decay due to some rare regions. You can also look at the distribution function. You can see that typical cuts will show this area law for the entanglement entropy, whereas certain other cuts of the system, certain rare cuts, will show a logarithmic growth of the entanglement entropy. So you can learn a lot from looking at the distribution of entanglement entropies in the system, which has been discussed today and which we also discussed in this 2013 paper. So how does this play out in this ladder system that we're discussing here? So I'm going to consider cuts like this. In the case of decoupled layers, the entanglement entropy is just the sum of the contribution from the two chains. So we have the disordered chain And that'll just give rise to an area law. So below some localization length, we'll see a volume law, and then that'll level off to a constant. Whereas from the other chain, we get a volume law contribution. And so to get the entanglement of the entire system, we just add up those two contributions. And so at short scales, we have a volume law where the prefactor now is the thermal entropy density of all degrees of freedom. And then at this localization length of the red layer, you get a crossover to still a volume law, but now the volume law has a smaller coefficient, which is just telling you that only one of the two systems is participating in your volume law scaling and the other one is frozen. If we now turn on interactions, there's the two scenarios that I discussed earlier. So the system could become fully localized, in which case you would see up to some localization length the full volume law and then a crossover to a constant. And alternatively, the system could fully delocalize, in which case you would see the volume law over all system sizes. And here the volume law coefficient would again be that of all degrees of freedom for all system sizes. So now let's finally look at some numerical results. So the entropy cuts here are illustrated in this upper cartoon here. So here I'm cutting out a couple of sites in the clean system. Here I'm cutting out sites in the disordered system. And here I'm cutting out sites of both of them together. The blue line here, unfortunately, these colors don't come out very nicely on this projector. The blue line here is the non-interacting case where we can separately consider these entropies. In the clean layer, we see this volume law up to some saturation in the middle of the system. Then it goes back down. In the delocalized system, we see growth at very small system sizes, and then an area law here. So from this, you can read off that the localization length here is on the order of two or three sites. And then the joint entropy is simply the sum of these two terms, which will show volume law scaling driven by this system. Now, if you turn on interactions, you get these other plots. I should caution that with interactions, these two cuts are a little bit strange, because now the two chains are talking to each other, so you get entanglement also from this. From the interface between the two chains. So here we don't expect to see an area law anymore, or rather area law and volume law become the same. The only thing you can read off here is that really the distinction between localized and clean systems seems to be lost at strong interactions. If you look at the cut that has two chains in it, this is more meaningful. And so if you look at the most strongly interacting case, which is this one up here, we see in particular that the entanglement in the middle of the system has pretty much doubled. So here it goes to just under 3, and here it goes to just under 6. And this is what we naively would have expected in the scenario where the entire system delocalizes, and so we get a volume law where here only half of the degrees of freedom participate, and here all of the degrees of freedom participate. Let's do this a little more systematically. So now I'm going to look at entropy cuts that just cut the system in left and right, just half system cuts, basically. This is the dependence for three different system sizes as a function of interaction strength. And you see that the entropy shoots up rapidly, and also this growth of the entropy at very weak interactions becomes sharper and sharper as we increase the system size, which would be consistent with delocalization of the entire system, or we did infinitesimal interaction strength in the thermodynamic limit. This is plotting basically the same data for different interaction strength as a function of system size. This is the non-interacting case, and then these are the interacting cases. And you see that the slope of this line, which is really just the entropy density, significantly increases from here to here. It actually doesn't double, it quadruples, but I think that's simply a finite size effect, which I think we can explain. So this would be consistent with delocalization of both layers. The system just upon adding infinitesimal interactions between the two chains, just goes into a completely delocalized regime. Is that the only thing we can get? Well, our system has the advantage of having many knobs we can turn, which is why we originally got interested in the system. And so there would be several ways of making the bath less efficient or less effective at delocalizing the system. One would be to reduce the density of states in the bath, so basically reduce the particle number. But you could imagine that finite size effects depend on particle spacing, so then you would just be making your finite size corrections larger. So a better way to go is maybe to reduce the bandwidth of the bath. So we can separately tune the hopping strength here in the clean and the disordered layer, and we can make the hopping strength in the clean layer much smaller, and thereby reduce the bandwidth of the bath. If you want to think of this purely as a local effect, you could think that some fermion here wants to hop from one side to another, and to do that wants to borrow some amount of energy from the bath, and the amount of energy it can borrow from the bath gets smaller and smaller as the bandwidth of that bath is decreased.
Excuse me, what is alpha here? It's like a spin projection.
Oh, alpha is like upper and lower layer.
It's just
the chain, yeah. It's one and two. Oh, my fermions are always spinless, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so what happens? This is again plotting the entropy at the center of the system as a function of interaction strength. Now this is for three different values of the hopping in the clean layer and two different disorder strengths. At this intermediate disorder strength, so this curve looks very familiar to what we've seen before. The entropy grows very quickly as we increase the electron or the fermion-fermion interactions. But then if we go down to this plot, something interesting happens. So here, as we turn on interactions, the entropy actually goes down. So this seems to be indicating that the system actually becomes more localized as we turn on interactions between the two chains rather than delocalizing. But now the question, of course, is this an effect that survives to the thermodynamic limit? So we have to do finite size scaling of this, which is shown here. This is a very busy plot, so let me zoom in on one corner for now. This is showing the entanglement entropy at the center of the system as a function of the system size. So I'm always cutting in the middle different strengths of the interaction, and then the different panels correspond to different disorder strengths along this direction and different bath bandwidth, if you wish, along this direction. And the upper panel here is for weak disorder and relatively large bandwidth of the bath, and that's just the plot we've seen before where the coefficient, the entropy density increases rapidly as we turn on interaction strength. And this seems to persist pretty much for all strengths of the bath hopping for this weak disorder regime. Now let's look at this intermediate regime where we have somewhat stronger disorder potential. Something interesting actually happens in these plots. If you look at these plots, there seems to be some kind of crossover where the slope of this entanglement increases. Now this is a little bit weird, right? Because Tarun just told us earlier today that the second derivative of ds with respect to the block size should be negative. So he ruled out this scenario of crossover from an area law to a volume law. So what happened here? Well, of course, the key assumption which he discussed at length in his talk is that the block size they were considering is much smaller than the total system size, right? And this is clearly violated here. So to see this, we would probably have to achieve a localization length smaller than the block size and the block size much smaller than the total system size, but we cannot simultaneously separate all these scales just because we're limited to fairly small systems in our exact diagonalization. And so what we can do here is we can make the single particle localization length smaller than the block size, but then we have to live with the block size being comparable to the total system size. And so what we find in this case is actually an explicit example where the at small scales, the coefficient of the volume loss seems to be increasing, but this is purely, we think that this is purely an effect of not properly separating these scales. You could think that there's, so if you now look at, let me go back to this, sorry. If you look at this, it seems like the scale where this crossover is happening gets to bigger and bigger system sizes. So you might think that there's an interesting effect going on here where to delocalize, the system has to look for more and more distant resonances as we decrease the bandwidth in the bath. And so you could imagine that we can make this length scale where we, where we see that crossover from some subthermal entropy to the true thermal entropy at larger and larger scales, but we only have so many system sizes to work with, so we can't definitely answer this question.
Actually, can I say, I think this inequality holds for all systems, irrespective. Talking about my rice.
Okay.
I apply that for other regions, but this is general. If you go back to the original derivation, it doesn't require. It's always, in fact, it could be, little length would be even bigger than half of a system. It's always concave. Remember.
Well, it clearly isn't in these, right?
Because you're doing it's a lattice scale. So you have, I'm writing a differential equation. So
okay. You think it's a lattice scale effect? Okay. Okay.
Isn't it just that you're varying big L?
Yeah, I mean, my explanation would be that I'm varying these two together.
I think it can hold for all little L if it fits big L, and your data is consistent.
Okay. Well.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I didn't see what you.
Okay. So, but finally, let me look at this regime of a strong disorder potential. And here, if we make the disorder very strong, so that the single particle localization length is very short, and we go to a regime where the bandwidth of this clean system is very small compared to the other scales in the system, we actually see that adding interactions reduces the entropy, and this doesn't seem to turn up, at least on all of the system sizes that are accessible to our numerics. So this would be a regime that's consistent with induced localization of the entire system, even though our single particle starting point was not fully localized. And with this, let me actually just conclude. So we studied this ladder model for many-body localization where the non-interacting limit is not fully localized, which is also a model for coupling an MBL system to a small bath where the number of bath degrees of freedom is comparable to those in the MBL system. And we see these three different regimes, one which seems to be the most generic one where the entire system just becomes delocalized, one that at least for the system sizes we can look at seems to be consistent with localization of the bath, and then some intermediate regime where we have to understand the finite size crossover. With that, let me thank you for your attention.
I just would like to look on this Hamiltonian that you wrote. Do I understand correctly that it is basically Hamiltonian of spins 1/2, which interact along the chain plus minus and between chains ZZ?
Yes.
The question is that you have T and V. What about their relative sign? Have you tried them having different signs? Because if signs are the same, they compete. If signs are different, they have...
Well, I think because we're looking at the middle of the many-body energy spectrum, I don't think that matters. Right? If we were looking at the ground state or the highest excited state, that would matter. But because we're looking in the infinite temperature ensemble, I don't think the signs of the various terms matter. I think you could actually map it into a term.
Yeah, there's a question back there.
Hi, Bella. So if you take the strong coupling limit between the two chains, you should also get localization of the bath. And that would be, I think it's...
Right.
Somewhat interesting, and it would be cool to do numerics on. So have you done any numerics on this?
So we haven't done interaction larger than what I showed because I was worried of making the interaction strength, you know, large compared to, you know, even the many-body bandwidth. I think then you can always kind of localize it. So we wanted to be a little careful with that limit.
So, quick question. So in your introductory slides, you somehow, at least I was left with an impression that there's intermediately ergodic phase with a half the degrees of freedom delocalized and the other one sort of not. That could persist to thermodynamic limit.
That was an illustration of the non-interacting limit, you know, which is fine-tuned. I would be surprised if you could make that phase persist, you know, in the generic case.
So did you look at any dynamics on top of these states other than the entanglement entropy?
Not yet. I mean, dynamics might be interesting here because they give you additional knobs like the relative energy density and so on, but we haven't explored that yet.
Yeah, because this model without the disorder is exactly what Norm and I looked at for doing clean stuff. And we didn't try to see entanglement entropy things really. We looked for dynamical signatures, and that was interesting.
Okay. So, yeah, we should talk about that.
Okay. So. Thank Bella again. So the last talk will be given by Norman Yao. So he's going to talk about quantum control in the many-body localized.